Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 15 of Mercury Dimes and the Men Who Love Them. Tonight we are going to be wrapping up our very slowly released drug out series on the history of money with a episode on crypto. This is clearly very topical currently. Wasn't exactly planned this way. The last time we recorded was prior to Christmas. If you listened to episode 14, that was very clear in our sign-off.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, someone wished for $25 silver, and to say he got that wish, I think, would be an understatement.
$30 silver, baby.
There you go. So first to start off, we have a couple of quick announcements. I think I mentioned at one point that we had started a Parler account. Parler is clearly gone tits up. Apparently it's back.
Yeah, the tits are back down. They found another hosting service. I don't know if they're actually online again. I didn't care that much. Social media is still social media, even if it's wrong, think social media.
Right. I did have the app on my phone still. It wasn't loading, so they're clearly not back in the same form. I don't know. I don't really care all that very much. I'm just to the point of very much considering not using Instagram anymore. I haven't deleted the Instagram feed, but I haven't posted on it in quite a bit now. Not in any hurry to use Instagram or give Instagram any more of my traffic or data. So we'll see how it goes there. Couple of things we have added, though, in the meantime. First, if you check the video descriptions for any of our recent videos on BitChute or Odyssey, and then I believe in a couple of the last show notes, we've posted some Bitcoin wallet addresses. If you feel motivated enough to support us with some crypto,
give us your internet meme coins and we will spend them all irresponsibly.
We don't have any Doge wallet currently, but Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Chainlink are all wallets that are all listed. And we'll get into those a bit as we go through tonight, obviously. The second thing to share is, if you are familiar at all with the Brave browser, Brave browser is a security-focused web browser that has one of their main objectives is to kind of significantly revamp the way that internet advertising works. So if you sign up for what they call Brave Rewards as a user, you're then eligible to gradually earn BAT tokens. BAT stands for Basic Attention Token. And you earn those basically by receiving, over time, pop-up ads from your browser. Now, these are not pop-ups in the standard way you think of pop-ups. They are little pop-up windows in the bottom right corner of your screen that actually come up through your Windows messaging bar as opposed to in the middle of your screen. So they literally do not interrupt your session at all. So that's one way that you profit at a small level from participating in the service. And the second piece of that is that we have registered our site as a content creator through the Brave service. So we are then eligible to earn rewards ourselves as a site through people who choose to donate their BAT tokens to us as a content creator. So we will have a link to Brave Browser's page about BAT tokens and the reward program in the show notes. Feel free to check that out. And if you are browsing our site, please consider using the Brave Browser. And I would consider using Brave Browser just in general. I am slowly trying to migrate more and more of my usage to it because it is based on the Chromium browser, the open source browser that Google is largely behind, but it has substantial modifications, largely all privacy focused, which is something I'm very much a fan of. So all that being said, some announcements out of the way, moving on to the highlight of the hour. What is our shiny rock of the week?
Adurpader. Shiny rock of the week this week is the gold 50 peso coin from Mexico, which I'm honestly, I have some of the details on the history of it, but not all of them. One of the fun facts is that they never updated the date on the coin. They've been minting them with a date of, I believe, 1946 for decades. Although I don't think they're being minted any longer. They've basically been supplanted by the gold Libertad, and which is they share a design with the Libertad, the face design of the naked winged lady, who I think is just named Libertad, is used on the older silver Libertads and at least some of the gold Libertads as well. But the appeal to me, and the reason why I care at all, is it is a 1.2-ounce gold coin. That is, it's not a pure gold coin, but the gold content is 1.2 troy ounces, which is not the largest, but one of the largest gold coins out there.
So by coin, you mean this is, at least was, actual currency at one point, or still has a face value at least?
It does have a 50 peso face value. I don't know exactly how much circulation they were intended to have. They might well have been more along the lines of Krugerrands, despite having a face value. I, like I said, I don't have the greatest grasp on the history of it. I just bought it because it was large and gold, and it has boobies on one side, and the standard Mexican seal, the eagle eating the snake on the backside, I think is very well executed on this coin. I like that design a lot.
This guy. That is really interesting, though, about the date. Is that common? I can't imagine that's common, keeping one date on coins that you're then continuing to mint for decades.
I can't really speak to the commonality of it. I know that is something that's done with restrikes, using the original dies to make new coins, for obvious reasons. And I know the U.S. did that for a couple years when they were switching off the silver coinage to cupronickel. They would still mint silver coins, but they were using the old dies to do it. Basically to continue the facade that they were no longer minting silver while they switched over to cupronickel.
Everything is a scam.
I mean, yes, this is them. Okay, so it was 1947, not 1946. Mexico City Mint continued to produce gold 50 pesos with a 1947 date through 1972, and also in the late 1990s and early 2000s.
Interesting. So do you have any idea, or do you have any idea when your coin was minted?
No idea. I mean, it has the 1947 date, and no idea when it was actually minted. I'm not sure there's any way you could figure that out, aside from maybe if they were making new dies throughout that time, so a actual numismatist could date the specific die that was used. Other than that, no idea.
Okay. I'm guessing this was another Provident acquisition?
It was, yes. Which was honestly a mistake. I should have waited for them to go back in stock at Golden Eagle Coin, because Golden Eagle Coin had them for cheaper. But actually, speaking of cheaper, one of the other benefits of the 50 peso coin is it is very low low premium gold when they're in stock, because they tend to get snapped up pretty quickly. But they you'll get them for considerably less premium than a Krugerrand or a American Gold Eagle.
Is it because they're less common or less... No, not common. Is it because they're less well known, or is it because they're less pure?
They are less pure. It is 900 fine gold as opposed to the 92-ish percent used in Krugerrands and Eagles. But I would guess they're just probably just less well regarded, I would assume.
Right. Well, you also seem to have bought during a bit of a price surge, or did you get in before? Because you bought this pretty recently, right?
I bought it in January. It cost me $2,400 in January, so not a great price. And I remember being salty because within a couple weeks, the price of gold dropped a bit, and I could have gotten it for about $100 cheaper.
Nice. All right, cool. So that is the Mexican 50 pesos gold coin. We will have a link for that in the show notes. So as we have very eloquently titled this episode, just WTF is a Bitcoin. Now, obviously, Bitcoin and crypto in general is making quite a bit of headlines for the last couple of years for sure, and these last couple of months, 100%, you know, assuming you've already gotten past the GameStop frenzy, even though someone's still out there definitely holding a bag. But let's spend a little bit of time trying to explain at a high level what exactly crypto is, what Bitcoin is specifically, and whether or not it's something that should be considered as a viable investment vehicle. So to start at the way back in the very beginning, Bitcoin is what is called a digital currency. It was created allegedly roughly back in January 2009 by a person under a pseudonym of Satoshi Nakamoto. Now, the person's identity has not been 100% confirmed. There are a couple people who claim to be him, but there's plenty of conspiracies and arguments over whether or not that is legit or not. Basically, Bitcoin has been around for over a decade now. Specifically, Bitcoin is a type of cryptocurrency. Now, there are no such things as physical Bitcoins.
Technically false. At least there are physical Bitcoin tokens that have data on them that will give you a Bitcoin. They have a Bitcoin physically encoded in a coin.
Okay, shut up. There are no such thing as a physical Bitcoin. You have all kinds of things that can hold Bitcoins, apparently. I guess if you want like, you know, a gold round with a Bitcoin logo printed on it that also has some kind of data port that you can connect to and put your Bitcoin on, sure. But the actual cryptocurrency itself does not have a physical form. It only exists on it's called a public ledger that is openly available to the general public. This is not completely novel idea, but the driving factor behind it for a lot of people, the attraction for a lot of people, is that Bitcoin are not issued, backed, or controlled by any central bank or government. It is completely a publicly generated, publicly traded, and arguably publicly manipulated currency with no physical backing whatsoever. Now, part of the attraction behind this, or a lot of the attraction behind this, a lot of what drove initial attention is why there are some people out there that are now incredibly rich because of Bitcoin, is that Bitcoin is generated or created, if you will, by what is called mining. This is basically a race between computers of all sizes, where only the most powerful ones are likely to win, but you are trying to solve complex hash puzzles, basically. Think of them as just really complex, long math equations that you're trying to be the first to solve. Whoever solves the equation first for a specific block receives the Bitcoin or coins associated with that block. And because you are mining off of these blocks, or because you are mining these hashes to generate Bitcoin, there is a finite amount of Bitcoin that can ever exist. Do you remember what that is, or do you know what that is off the top of your head?
The maximum number of Bitcoin? I think it was 23 million.
Okay. So that finite total is a solution to, in some people's minds, the Central Bank of the United States just printing money, the Federal Reserve just creating money out of thin air constantly, and in a lot of people's opinions, irresponsibly. So in this regard, you have a finite supply. Once that total is reached, you cannot create more. Of course, you do have the downside of it can be lost. Because it only exists in digital space, it is possible to lose the money. You'll see plenty of stories online of people who had some Bitcoin back when it was worth 50 cents or a dollar a piece, and they had it on a hard drive somewhere, and they either forgot about it, or the hard drive broke, or they just wiped out the computer because they didn't care about it that much. And now that each Bitcoin is worth, as of today, this is the middle of February, it's somewhere close to $50,000 per Bitcoin. So those people are, of course, kicking themselves all day, every day.
Discount sale on ropes. Get your ropes here.
Anyway, so another piece of the Bitcoin attraction is the actual use of it as a currency. So one of the big things is that there's no borders or permission needed to exchange or purchase things with Bitcoin. The software necessary to access the public ledgers to become a Bitcoin node, a node on the network, can be done anywhere by anyone. Additionally, it is anonymous. The only way to identify a specific person on the network is to figure out their wallet ID. If you can figure out a specific wallet ID, it's a long string of numbers. Those are static. So once you have a wallet, that wallet's ID does not change. You can have multiple wallets, obviously, but that wallet ID does not change. So you can track transactions between wallets, but you have to be highly motivated, as in a government agency of some kind, to generally to make the connection from a specific wallet ID then to a specific person, if that person is trying to avoid being identified in that regard. So the next thing is that unless an exchange gets involved in some way with a transaction, you can't prevent transactions from occurring. So there was a big hubbub 6 or so months ago, maybe, about someone that broke into a bunch of Twitter accounts of like famous people on Twitter and posted a standard scam of, hey, send your Bitcoin to my Bitcoin address because I'm paying things forward. I will send you back double what you had. And some number of people actually did this, but some of the big Bitcoin exchanges, big crypto exchanges, allegedly got involved and prevented people from sending Bitcoin out to this address. I'm not sure. I'm not for sure how accurate that is. That may have only been rumor.
I'm pretty sure Coinbase did that. I'm remembering the instance you're speaking about. I definitely know that at least one exchange said they stopped almost all those transactions.
Yeah, so that's, I'm not sure how that gets into, I'm not sure how that affects the situation here. You clearly need to be very in, you need to have a very strong presence in the Bitcoin network to be able to affect something like that.
Well, it's not even that. It's, I think it's that the, if the coins are in a wallet on the exchange, the exchange controls what happens to the coins. If you ever heard the not your wallet, not your keys, not your coins, the exchange has the keys to those coins.
Sure, sure. Okay. That's why people who are very invested in crypto or are very concerned about access / privacy to crypto, because there have been multiple stories about exchanges being hacked and tons of crypto being stolen. That's why the common advice is to have what is called, I believe, a cold wallet, where you're basically, you have your own wallet installed and running somewhere on your computer, on a drive somewhere that you have moved your crypto into. So it is not then under the control of a exchange or anyone else. So you can't be prevented from making a transaction. So that's the piece there. Your ease of access and trading ability is definitely easier if you have your crypto on an exchange, but this clearly then opens you up to limitations on what you can do with it.
Security versus accessibility. I just pulled up a The Verge article. It says Coinbase blacklisted the address it was being used in the scam and stopped around 1,100 customers from sending Bitcoin to the address.
1,100, that's impressive.
They were trying to send almost $300,000 worth of Bitcoin.
Damn.
Which is even more now, because this took place in July of last year.
Right, right, okay. So that's kind of some of the in-the-weeds details at a high level. There are plenty of people who have a messiah view or messianic view of crypto and Bitcoin specifically. And I absolutely agree that this is a whole new era of currency at some level, and the effects of this are only starting to be noticed. Like, one of the big things is ransomware with computers has only really become feasible in the last few years, and why it's so popular now is because of crypto. Because you have a method of sending or exchanging money or exchanging value in a way that is not easily tracked. Because previously it used to be you needed to tell people to go to their pharmacy and buy iTunes gift cards, because that was one relatively untrackable form of money. But now with crypto, where you literally just tell people, hey, all of your data is encrypted and you will not be able to get it back unless you send me X amount of money in X crypto, which interestingly enough has migrated off of Bitcoin now, because Bitcoin is trackable, traceable to some extent.
It's fully trackable and traceable. Literally all you have to do is find out the identities of the people holding the wallet, and you know every transaction they've ever made. It's all public. That's one of the downfalls of Bitcoin. That and the fact that it's deflationary, which means it's useless as a currency.
Right, but that's where the privacy protections on, like, the precautions you're taking as far as identifying yourself or being identified from the wallet, that's where that comes in. If you are taking privacy precautions with your wallet, then you would need to be highly resourced in order to figure out who is actually involved with a specific wallet.
An investigator would need to be highly resourced to figure out who's involved. Although you could also, the kind of investigator that I would assume you'd be worried about in this context probably has those resources, and you can always piece it apart by finding the identities of the people who you had transacted with that are not so conscientious of their privacy. My point is, buy Monero. Just kidding. I don't know any Monero.
Yeah, so Monero is, yes, the currently top preferred crypto for, I don't want to say everyone that has it is in this camp, but if you are into some kind of illicit activity, whether it's cybercrime or generally trying to buy quote-unquote illegal items, Monero is far more untrackable, untraceable than Bitcoin is. Anyway, so there will be plenty of people singing the praises of Bitcoin and crypto. So we're not going to get into that a whole lot here because, again, that's kind of just down a massive rabbit hole. It is absolutely revolutionary in what it means for the future of the internet and, honestly, society at some level, but we don't really know what that's going to look like. At this point, it's still a big, 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 huge pile of speculation. One cool reference, we'll have this in the show notes, is a link to a posting on the Reddit or the subreddit r/cryptocurrency. And a user u/lane posted the top 50 cryptocurrencies, each explained with one sentence. Now, he kind of stretched the truth there a little bit because a lot of these have at least two sentences. But this is a really cool introduction to a lot of the biggest named cryptos out there. For instance, we have for Bitcoin, the original. According to the creator or creators, Satoshi Nakamoto, it was created to allow online payments to be sent from one party to another without going through a financial institution. And then we have Ethereum, which is definitely the second biggest name out there, which is, quote, the wonder child of crypto. Acts as an infrastructure for most decentralized applications, introduces smart contracts, which are like programs with specific procedures that once deployed, no one can change. And then you have all kinds of other specific coins. Like you have Litecoin, which is supposedly Bitcoin's cousin with faster transactions and lower fees. You have Binance Coin, which is a coin issued or created by the Binance crypto exchange, which is valuable because, or it is perceived to be valuable because it is the most popular centralized exchange. Then we have Dogecoin, which you may have heard of very recently, which is literally just a meme coin that has some limited amount of traction from people who think that they can pump it, apparently. And I love the description here is great. Wow, such high ranking. Then parentheses, okay, now please let's get Stellar back into the top 10. Stellar is another cryptocurrency, of course, and there's all kinds of different things in here. The definition of Monero is if you need drugs. And that was obviously a bit tongue-in-cheek, but then this is the last one here. Monero's goal is simple, to allow transactions to take place privately and with anonymity. Even though it's commonly thought that Bitcoin can conceal a person's identity, it's often easy to trace payments back to their original source because blockchains are transparent. On the other hand, Monero is designed to obscure senders and recipients alike through the use of advanced cryptography. Obviously, this coin is the go-to on the dark web. So anyway, we will link this in the show notes. Very interesting read. Great introduction. All kinds of crypto out there for basically everything. Tons of competition, tons of things that are trying to do the same thing at the end of the day. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, which ones kind of fall out of favor. Because I imagine some crypto are just going to eventually get dumped and just kind of forgotten.
I mean, it happens all the time. The rug pull, the day of the rug pull arrives and whatever shitcoin you were in goes to zero. And that's how it is. Especially all the ones that are just pump and dumps. Literally just make a coin, make it public, get some hype around it, get the price bid up, dump all the ones you're holding, and call it a day.
Which happens on /biz all the time.
Yes, it does. And there's always plenty of pink Wojax afterwards. But I mean, that's just the way it is with a lot of cryptocurrencies. It's like, especially the pre-mined ones, is there's so many ways to manipulate markets in specific currencies if you already have majority ownership of the currency. If you control multiple times the float of the currency, then you can just do whatever the heck you want with the price. Aside from pump it, obviously.
Right. Okay. So now that that basic introduction's out of the way, let's talk now a little bit about the value of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general as an investment vehicle, and if it has any as such. That was a great sentence. So let's give this over to you then. What are your thoughts on crypto as an investment?
As an investment, it's... Well, are we talking crypto in general or Bitcoin specifically?
Either or.
Okay, so Bitcoin specifically, it is a pretty good investment as long as you have the self-control to not buy high and sell low. Because up until people lose faith in it, which is going to happen at some point, but no way of predicting when, it is going to... It's essentially a Ponzi scheme. In that it's all, the price is always going to pump because the supply can't be inflated, and as it goes up, you're always going to get more people buying in. So until something happens like it gets banned or some kind of media campaign demonizing it, or someone comes up with a flaw that allows them to print additional bitcoins or something like that, it's probably going to continually pump, with obviously giant crashes that screw a whole bunch of people over. But like, as long as Bitcoin is relevant, the price will increase because it is deflationary. Which also makes it a crap currency, so it's basically only a speculative investment. For other cryptocurrencies, it really varies based on the currency. Because Bitcoin is basically just, it's deflationary, and it has the best branding. It's the most well-known. The average smooth brain probably has heard of Bitcoin, or they probably haven't heard of, say, I don't know, Algorand. Other coins beyond that don't have that brand recognition to rely on, and a bunch of them aren't deflationary either, so it's basically down to how much you think their value proposition works. Like Ethereum being a platform for different currencies, as I understand it, I don't really know much about Ethereum. Or all the other different gimmicks they have, like Chainlink and their oracles. Or Dogecoin, which is literally just a meme, and that's all you really need to make it big.
So you mentioned deflationary in regards to Bitcoin. Can you briefly define what deflationary means? Because I don't think that's intuitive.
Okay, so most people have heard of inflation, which people usually define as prices go up. Inflation is actually inflation of the money supply. That is, you start with a certain amount of money circulating through your economy, and you print out a whole bunch more money, or you debase a currency based on metals to increase the total amount flowing through the economy, which has the eventual effect of all the prices go up because obviously people have more money to spend. The opposite of that is deflation, when there is less money going through society, essentially so prices go down. And the catch being that anyone who has already spent the currency before the prices go down kind of gets screwed over. And anyone who's holding debt before the prices go down, they get screwed over because the relative value of the money, although the number, the total they have to pay hasn't changed, the relative value of that total has gone up a whole bunch. Any successful currency has to essentially grow in line with the economy. If the circulating supply stays exactly the same and the economy is expanding, then it's essentially deflating because it's deflating compared to the economy that it's in. And Bitcoin is standing still, mostly. I mean, obviously still some is being mined, but it's being mined very, very slowly. Bitcoin is basically standing still, so as the adoption expands, the value is going to increase, which means it is deflating. Which means anyone who spends Bitcoin on anything that is not going to give them a better return than Bitcoin is basically just wasting money.
So basically, in a deflationary monetary system, if you have the currency in question, you would be best served to hold it?
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
And in an inflationary monetary system, you'd be best served by spending it as quickly as possible before it debases further.
Right. And then, so if you have a currency that you're not spending, obviously that's only going to cause prices to continue to drop because there's no demand.
Cause prices to continue to drop because there's no demand, and the circulating supply of currency is continually decreasing. So feedback loop, just how inflation is a feedback loop that gives us hyperinflation. But hyperdeflation is much harder to achieve because obviously money printers do exist.
Right. So that is why, unironically, Dogecoin actually makes a bit of sense to me, because there's no limit on the amount of Dogecoin that can exist as far as I'm aware. So there is incentive to continue mining it as long as it's actually cost efficient to do so. But if the price were to fall to a level where it makes no longer makes sense to do so, then the supply is then going to shrink because it's not worth the energy that it costs to mine it. Does that make sense, at least where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I'm following you. It's basically like any commodity in that sense.
Right. So instead of a central bank or a government controlling the supply for their own agenda, you're literally having supply and demand for the amount of the money in the system, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Essentially. It's how commodity-backed currencies worked in the past.
Right. Now, of course, that makes attempts to pump a currency that can then be mined, like Dogecoin, with Elon getting into the memeing, that makes that kind of futile, because you can get it up to you can increase the price to some extent. Like, I think it may have touched 9 cents per coin recently, but unless you have obviously a massive amount of it, you're not going to exactly get much out of it, especially because most people are going to join at the top. Like, always seems to be the trend.
BOMO win at the top and then panic sell to crush the price even farther down.
Right, exactly. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about how to actually get into crypto, because we both have limited positions in crypto. We're both Coinbase users, which I'm a big fan of Coinbase because they make it so easy to get to just get into crypto. And I have a handful of specific coins. I shouldn't say specific. I have a handful of different coins that I purchased for not really any specific reason, but they've all pretty much all done incredibly well over the last couple months. Last month, really, to be fair. But I'm under no illusions that this is sustainable or going to stay at this level, because there is a huge fever pitch around it right now. Like back in, I believe it was beginning of 2017, when people at the job I was in at that time were coming up to me like, man, you gotta look into this Bitcoin thing. And I'm just like, if random people in the office have heard about this now, then you know we're in a substantial bubble. And of course, lo and behold, it crashed significantly shortly after that.
Get your ropes here.
Now, of course, we're back to more than double the price it was then. I believe it peaked at 20,000 back in 2017, and now it's up close to 50. So this is whole new levels. And of course, this is where the limited supply comes in, because the more and more people that want in on it, the higher the price is going to keep going. But again, as you said, alluded to before, we have no idea what's going to happen, because you know that there are governments all over the world. I mean, Facebook's attempt at getting into some kind of crypto was met with such near universal just rage.
Hand-wringing, I think, is a good way to put it.
Well, hand-wringing, but also like, there's no way we could ever allow this to happen in response to Facebook. I'm no fan of Facebook, but I'm also no fan of governments that love to heck with their money supply frequently. So that rage and hand-wringing was hilarious, almost to the level of CNBC's guests with GameStop a couple weeks ago. But anyway, where I'm going with that is, it would not at all surprise me if at some point in the United States, for instance, there is some kind of big move against crypto. Our current Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen.
Wait, is she current right now, or has she just been nominated? I don't even know.
No, she's been confirmed. That's why she's involved in the whole SEC nonsense with GameStop. But Janet Yellen was basically one of the masterminds behind the massive bailouts of 2007, 2008, 2009. She is all about money printers.
She's all about money printers and speaking fees from Wall Street firms.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think you pointed out originally during one of her confirmation hearings, she was talking about how we need to consider taxing, what was the term?
Unrealized gains.
Yes. Taxing unrealized capital gains, which, how on earth could you possibly do that? I don't know. Like, I cannot begin to fathom how you could do that. And I also cannot fathom the amount of rage that would generate from, you know, people who the government actually cares about pleasing. But anyway, one other thing to touch on briefly are the different categories of crypto. So there are a few different general categories that things tend to fall into. Bitcoin, we talked about, has a static total amount that can never exist. So that's what you have when you're deflationary currencies, as we mentioned before. There are others like Dogecoin, which I do not believe have a limit. So theoretically, they could be an infinite supply, as long as, of course, as there's energy being expended to mine them. You also have your stable coins, which generally are linked to a underlying currency. Like, there's the USD coin, which US dollar coin, basically. It always exactly matches the dollar, the US dollar, one-to-one. So one coin is worth $1. There's a couple of others. I shouldn't say a couple. There is, I'm sure, plenty of others. There's one that, it's one that the DAI coin, D-A-I, that I have a small amount of, that is not tied to the dollar. It's tied to a basket of something. I don't remember what, but basically it always is very close to a dollar. It's got a little bit more fluctuation. Like, it might go to 99 point something cents or $1 and point something cents, but never fluctuates far from that. And then there's all kinds of other coins that are seeking to be the networks of exchange for other coins or types of applications or types of all kinds of different things. There's just really an infinite number of things out there, but there definitely seems to be a lack of interest, I would say, in creating more coins that have an actual limit. I could be wrong here because there are literally thousands of coins out there, but most of the big ones that I've interacted with do not have a limit that I've encountered. Do you know if you've seen anything different?
I have not spent any time looking into that. I definitely haven't heard of any that I can recall.
Right. So that's kind of where Bitcoin being the OG, it's kind of a lot of kinks that have been worked out since then. But of course, being the OG, it has the most market share, most name recognition, all that kind of thing. All right. So what is your top coin, or what is your favorite coin currently?
So right now, I am, the majority of my holdings, which are not very substantial, I made a Coinbase account, did the earn rewards on the Coinbase account to get a little bit of cryptocurrency, and then converted basically all those free currencies into Algorand for the staking yields on Coinbase, and then also I put $25 of my own money in there. I don't know why I gave all that detail. Anyway, the majority of my holdings are Algorand because the staking yields are sweet. And also, when I got into it, it was below a dollar. So obviously, you know, buy low, sell high. Also have a little bit of DAI because that has a staking yield or some type of yield on. I'm actually not sure where the yields come from. And that's going to get turned into Algorand if Algorand dips back below a dollar a coin.
Right. Yeah. So I've been using that as well. First, let's talk a little bit about staking, I would say. So staking is basically, from my understanding, a simpler method of mining.
It's certainly less energy intensive.
Right. So basically, you are loaning your holdings out to support the operations and security of a network. By putting them out there, I'm sure there's some risk involved, but I don't understand where the risk would come in this context, because unless the network is breached or crashes in some way, I'm not sure how you're risking it, because you're putting them to work. It's not like a loan in that someone might fail to pay back the loan, although I guess that could be possible if a node isn't processing properly or communicating properly. Again, that's out of my knowledge base. But basically, you're putting your coins to work. There are a variety of coins that have relatively low yields. Algorand is one of the highest on Coinbase, and there are a couple other exchanges that are making a bit of headlines recently for having some higher yields out there. Like the whole DeFi network, which I don't understand very much at all. There's a lot of headlines and excitement around the DeFi network coins currently for that reason, for the return that they provide.
all the crypto nerds that listen to this episode are going to be rolling their eyes at our ignorance.
I'm sure. There's a lot of them out there.
But they should have been warned off by the fact that this is a precious metals podcast.
Right. Even though we should now need to get a silver round with the Bitcoin symbol on it. So, you know, it all comes back together. But one of the other things I wanted to mention as well. So talking about Coinbase. Coinbase does have these really cool programs where basically if you sign up for an account, first of all, you can then complete short little training videos and single question tests for small amounts of cryptocurrency. These are various small currencies that you're very unlikely to have heard of unless you're familiar with the space. But the cool thing, rather impressive thing, is that over the last month, a lot of these reward coins have quadrupled, quintupled, some even have 10x'd their original value. So the super big brain thing that I've done is when some of these things are getting substantially high, I've just been transferring them to DAI coin because DAI is a stable coin. So basically, if I got $10 of a coin, now it's worth $75. I take like $25 of that, transfer that over to DAI coin. So I'm preserving that $25 value. So I'm still leaving stuff exposed in whatever that crypto is, the original crypto. So if that continues going up, great. But I've also locked in a small portion of that gain. Now, big question is, I have no idea if that's considered a taxable event. The IRS is doing God knows what. They're definitely increasing they're tightening the screws on people who they don't think are reporting their crypto earnings. So I have no idea if this is considered earnings or not. I haven't gone back to the US dollar, so I don't see why it would. But who actually knows here?
As I understand it, crypto-to-crypto transactions are taxable. It's like if you switch from one stock to another stock. Although you're not cashing out in USD, the IRS doesn't care. They don't regard it as a currency, regard it as an asset. So going from one coin to another is taxable. But of course, you know, for those of us who are aficionados of tax fraud, there's certain thresholds you have to hit before Coinbase will report you to the IRS. So if you're sneaky and stay below those, just heck 'em.
Well, your colorful use of definitions here, I don't know that tax fraud would be staying underneath a threshold.
Well, it's still reportable. It's just Coinbase won't report it unless it hits a certain threshold. It's like how I'm pretty sure all interest from your bank is reportable, but my bank at least won't send me a tax statement for the interest unless I earn a certain amount in a year.
Fair enough. Just for the record, we are by no means advocating not reporting your taxes. Please do not shoot his dog.
It's sort of similar to if you hold American Silver Eagles and you sell them, the coin shop is not required to report that to the IRS. You are legally required to report that, but no one else is doing it. So, you know, honor system and all that.
Yeah, there's no honor here. Anyway, one last thing before we go then. I've mentioned Coinbase a couple times. As an exchange, I'm very much a fan of them. So I am going to quickly shill for them. In the show notes, we will have a link to Coinbase, a referral code link. I do not know for sure what that does for you if you follow the link.
If you buy or sell $100 worth of cryptocurrency on Coinbase, the person who gave you the link and also yourself receives $10 worth of Bitcoin. That's what the link does.
Awesome. There you go. So follow the link, buy or sell $100 worth of crypto, and then get $10 free. In addition to all of the reward coins, some of which I believe are still active because they do have a maximum pool. So once all the rewards are earned, then the program ends. But definitely check out the rewards if you do so.
Yeah, the rewards, even if you get any, it's essentially just free money. Like say you get $30 worth of rewards, you can just cash that at the USD, put it in your bank account. And I mean, it took you a little bit of time, but other than that, it's just cash for doing very little.
Right, right. So again, check the show notes for the Coinbase referral link. And then I think that about wraps up for tonight. Any closing thoughts there? What are you going to do with your big Algorand winnings?
Honestly, if I hit a threshold where like, well, this is acceptable crypto gains, I'm just going to cash it up, put it in precious metals. It's the stable coin play, except it's even more so, because instead of being pinned to currencies, it's a commodity.
Right. There you go.
Or here's something else you can do. There are some of the major precious metals dealers accept cryptocurrencies as payment for coins. I know Provident does it, and I know JM Bullion does it. I think it's JM Bullion. They accept some of the major cryptocurrencies and then some U.S. dollar pegged coins. Not quite as cheap as a wire transfer, but still you can just go directly from one to the other.
Right. Those are generally going to be the big name coins, though, right? Like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and maybe Litecoin?
Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin are the ones I saw, and then Provident and JM Bullion both say four U.S. dollar pegged stable coins. And they don't actually list stable coins, so I'm not sure which one those are. Probably like USDC, USDT, and some others. I don't know.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Cool. So be sure to check that out. And then I think that means we need to develop a silver-backed crypto. Oh, wait. That probably already exists.
That does exist. It's called Kinesis. They have gold and silver-backed crypto.
Interesting. I need to check that out because I have not actually looked into that.
Actually, I'm going to throw this in here just for a little bit of a, I don't know, wider explanation. If you are trying to invest in crypto versus precious metals, you're trying to decide between which, it's two completely different investment philosophies involved. Physical precious metals are essentially a savings account that is resistant to inflation. I'm not going to say immune to inflation. And you don't have to deal with third-party risk. You do not have to deal with the bank going under. You don't have to deal with anything. The only risk is risk you control, like your home's personal physical security, whether you can trust your family members, that kind of thing. It's taking all the risk out of the system and putting it on yourself. Cryptocurrencies are highly speculative. You could say investments. I don't even know if investments is correct. That are all about high risk, high reward. Maybe you'll lose your life savings. Maybe you'll triple your life savings or 10 times your life savings. And they're not in any way comparable because one's all about making money. One is all about protecting the money that you have. So the people that say, why are you buying precious metals when you could be making tons of money on cryptocurrencies? Someone who's buying physical precious metals is not trying to make a lot of money. Well, I mean, some are, but those are the super doomer types. Anyone who isn't a super doomer is doing it to protect the value that they've earned, not to multiply the value they've earned.
That was good. Yeah, the kind of person who would be saying or asking that kind of question of you, it's also the kind of person who would be on Twitch asking a day trader streamer if they should sell their current holdings because they're down in a day when 3/4 of the market is down.
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't buy high, sell low, buddy.
I mean, yes, that is a way of life. Absolutely. Well, cool. This has been a good discussion. Going to have to try to cut this down into a manageable length.
That's what she said.
Well, I was going to cut that sentence out, but now I have to leave that in. Nice. Nice. All right. Well, this then wraps up our episode on the history of money. We are going to have a variety of standalone episodes. We have quite the list of topics, various things to discuss. So we will get back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Well, regularly is a bit of a stretch.
Fair. Anyway, take care, everyone. Talk soon.
Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mercury Dimes and the Men Who Love Them. Please be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast, and be on the lookout for new episodes coming out roughly every week. The podcast website is mercurydimespodcast.com. We are also posting episodes to BitChute and Odyssey. Those channel links are in the show notes. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, or just want to shill the hot new crypto that your wife's boyfriend traded you for your Nintendo Switch, email us at mercurydimes@outlook.com. Until next time, keep stacking that silver, my dudes. We are not investment professionals. This is not real investment advice. If you take action on any of this information without consulting an investment advisor, you're even dumber than we thought.
Stop it. Get some help.